Ladies and gentlemen, the Football Scoop Podcast is back. It's Tuesday. Scott Strickland and the powers at Florida have made the decision to part ways with Billy Napier. Billy Gonzalez is going to guide him the rest of the way. Maybe Billy Gonzalez is Tim Skipper and Jerry Neuheisel. Maybe not. Conventional wisdom says Florida's looking big. Steve Spurrier is already out there trolling everyone the way only Steve can. He had fun with Lane and Drink recently. He'll have fun with everybody mentioned. Gentlemen, why don't we talk through some potential candidates at Florida? JB, seems like all of the discussion is on Lane early. I know there's a lot of other people who are in the mix in the event Jimmy Sexton and Lane work a deal, and then the deal comes back to Ole Miss. Lane's going to get paid big time for all the reasons. Is he made by Florida?
Yeah, I should note in talking with people, and you have as well, that I can't repeat the phrase I was told about how much Ole Miss is willing to pay Lane, but the back end of the phrase is ton, and I'll let you decide which four-letter pejorative goes in front of that, but it's a blank ton of money. Ole Miss is going to do everything it possibly can to keep Lane, but it's not exactly a well-kept secret that for quite a while, Lane has cast a bit of a longing look at that Florida Gators job. Now, I still contend it's not the same job it was even 5 years ago because of the way college athletics has changed, but Florida will make Lane say no and then reassess its search from there. I very strongly believe that.
I have a question for the class here. Let's say you're Florida and you have the discussion that we're getting Lane. What do you think? There we go. What do we as a group think at the type of offer would the Godfather offer for Lane, for Florida, to get him out of an Ole Miss situation when they're willing to pay him a blank ton to stay? And he's already said lots of things about how much he loves in Mississippi. What type of Godfather offer would get Lane out of Ole Miss?
Well, allow me to just rattle off thoughts. One, genuinely, other than stroking someone's ego, saying I'm now the highest paid guy in college football, I don't know how much difference there is in the real world between $11.5 and $13 million. I have no idea. I don't think these guys have any idea, to be honest. There is the ego play, no doubt about it. But things you can do to excite a coach, you can unquestionably talk about the dollars available to go build your team. They want to hear about money for staff because that is critically important. But I think these days they're equally, if not more, interested in money for the team. Commitment to facilities and things like that. They all have got plenty of good enough facilities. Some of them need a little improvement here and there, but there's no question about that'll get done. It's about investing in the team. And some of these guys who are getting a little bit older, Brian Kelly's of the world, they want to hear a little bit about work-life balance and what the university leadership and expectations are, if that makes any sense. But for most of them, it's, will you give me all the resources I need? Can you get me all the resources I need to go win national championships?
And while I very strongly believe that in-state recruiting isn't one of the top criteria now quite the way it was a decade ago, it's still important. There's still a greater volume of particularly O-linemen, D-linemen, and elite skill players in the Sunshine State that not only can you go pay, but you know what? It doesn't cost your parents as much to come see you, or we don't have to devote as much of our pooled resources to pay for your parents to come see you. Also, let's not forget that as good of a play caller as Lane is, he might be a better deep sea fisherman, and you can hop a helicopter from Gainesville and go do your deep sea fishing. And you can't do that from Oxford, Mississippi. What kind of an offer, Zach? I think it would have to be, I think you'd have to open in the 6-year, $84 million range. I think that's $14 million a year. I think that's what we're talking about to get him to leave a situation that by all accounts he very truly loves. And $13 million plus is where Kirby is. And it wouldn't be necessarily about just making more than Kirby, but come on, if he's going to joke that the guy's not burning that many calories, he's damn sure going to joke if he starts making $500,000 more.
Another question for the class I have. Lane has complained, groaned about fan support. There were empty seats for the Washington State game. I saw some photos of vast empty sections for that game. Florida, as we know, fills its stadium, even though this team was obviously not contending for anything. They were still full house for the Texas game. I didn't see Mississippi State. So we all know Lane says a lot of stuff. Some of it is he's just Lane's talking. Some of it is very calculated. Do we think there's anything to that of Lane motioning towards, well, I don't have the support I need to win a national championship here. I'd have that at Florida, and therefore I'm out. Is there something to that, or is Lane just talking?
I think Lane's just being his new, improved, authentic self, no filter. That there are a lot of similarities in people that had success in Gainesville. Scott's already mentioned, Spurrier. He was no filter, and that is Lane right now, no filter. Offensive innovator, Lane Kiffin. You can see the similarities and why people in Gainesville would want Lane to come. The fan base expectations, and Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like at Ole Miss, like we want to be in position to win national titles, right? And win one eventually. At Florida, the expectation is bring them home every year. So then it comes down to what resources are you going to get? And are those resources enough to make me feel like I can compete? Because the administration's definition of success, the fan base's expectations of success are super, super important. Do those things match the expectations? I tell that to every high school head coach that I talk to. Those two things have to match in order for it to make sense.
I think I like that. I would note when you're asking that question, Zach, just on quick research and talking about readiness or availability of resources, the Swamp seats almost 25,000 more people than the Vaught. That's significant because that's revenue. That's bottom line dollars coming into your program. And yeah, big picture, you're sharing those dollars with other programs at your school. But when football is your engine driver regardless, and you can seat that many more people every single home game, and you're starting to get five SEC home games every other year instead of four in most cases, then that's significant. So, Lane Kiffin has made Ole Miss a great job. Florida's a great job year in and year out regardless.
I agree. JB touched on the 6 years as well. To me, that's a thing. State of Mississippi has some law governing. I can't remember if they can only do 4 years or five, but they're capped somewhere in there. So Keith Carter's been trying to come up with a way of extending that, but I don't think there really is at this time. Is Lane really worried about year six and seven? Probably not.
I agree with you, Scott, but I do think if you're Lane and you're committed to making this move, you're doing it for a raise. You're not just leaving Ole Miss for same money or less. I think you're completely right that there's no material difference between 13 and $11.5 million, but at the same time you're not leaving without a massive number. I think they're both true.
Sure, absolutely.
As we talk about these large numbers that probably Doug can only relate to, that is there's no state income tax in Florida. There is in Mississippi. And Mississippi is either the 49th or 50th poorest state in the United States. So make of that what you will. But even level money is a lot more money in Florida. And then you get a raise and you're still paying less taxes. So,
yeah, I think I could be wrong. I think Mississippi recently got rid of their state income tax. But again, guys, at that level,
yeah,
that's not coming into your calculation, in my opinion. All right. If Lane, years ago, Lane Kiffin told me, this was 10 years ago, he specifically told me, just he and I in his office, the goal is to go win Super Bowls. So if for whatever reason, it could be family considerations, I mean, his family's really happy. Knox is playing quarterback a little bit. You know, daughter's still there. Layla's there. Chris is there. Chris's whole family's there. So if for whatever reason, Lane decided to stay in Ole Miss, for all those reasons, perhaps, who's number two? Well, it doesn't really matter who's number two. Let's talk about all the potential other than Lane's. How about Drink? He wears a visor. He and Spurrier would go quip for quip. He would engage far more than Billy would with Spurrier, and I think it would be hilarious.
Yeah, I think the search pretty quickly pivots in the direction of Drink if they feel like they don't have a prayer of getting anywhere with Lane Kiffin. It won't only pivot to Drink, but there's not a question in my mind that Drink becomes a viable person there. And it wasn't pretty the way that they beat Auburn on Saturday, but we're still talking about Missouri in the year of 2025, having been favored going into Auburn and then winning that game and being a one-loss team that remains very much in the conversation for the CFP. I mean, Drink's team is as much in the conversation for the CFP right now as Lane's team.
Their only loss was a battle with Alabama, and Alabama's playing extremely well. Just like Lane was in a battle with Kirby, and Kirby's team's playing extremely well. You know, like same team.
Yeah, I mean, Florida, we know they're going to hire an offensive-minded head coach, and we know they're not going to hire, for better or worse, they're not going to hire a G5 head coach. After all the Sun Belt Billy jokes, there ain't no way Scott Strickland's going to turn around and hire another G5 head coach. So you eliminate a lot of people right there. And Drink obviously checks both those boxes. He's 27-6 since the start of 2023 at Missouri. Logic tells you if you can go 27-6 at Missouri, you can do that or better at the University of Florida. Question remains for me, can Drink go in and win battles for the difference makers on the lines against Kirby, against DeBoer, against you name it, at Florida? I don't know that we have the evidence one way or the other that Drink can or cannot do that. But we do know is that he's really good in the portal. He went out and got Bro Pribula from Penn State. Ahmad Hardy's probably the gem of the entire portal. Got him from ULM to come to Missouri. So he's proven he could build that way. I think you could do – I'm on record saying I don't think he makes any sense at Penn State. I think he makes sense at Florida.
Drink also if Blake Baker, you know, wasn't a Louisiana kid, he'd have held on to Blake Baker. In a battle with any other school, he'd have kept Blake Baker in that deal. Drink's a pretty good ball coach, guys. Mm-hmm. Pretty good people, like really good people, too.
And if you look at how he's built that Missouri team, the defensive line is one of the absolute gems. It reminds you of a Florida Gators defensive line, like a team that's going to pin their ears back and come after you and be an absolute pest to you all Saturday long. They did it a couple weeks ago against Alabama, played really, really well. And to be an offensive-minded guy and maybe not air it out as much as some of the past Florida coaches, but you've got to be able to play solid defense at Florida, and I think Drink brings that to the table. I think the question will remain, if I'm Eli Drinkwitz, and I've got an opportunity at Florida or Penn State, I think that's a tougher decision than a lot of people chalk up to.
And the other consideration here is, I'm not saying there's right or wrong, but if these coaches get goals, all of them to go win a national championship, you can do that, safe to say, easier at Florida than Missouri. That's an uncontroversial statement, yes. But you win 9 games a year at Missouri, they'll eventually build you a statue. You win 9 games a year at Florida, they'll find a reason to run you out.
Well, eventually, but not right now. Florida
eventually,
would give
eventually,
yes, to eventually. Win 9 games.
Yes, eventually, in time, not immediately.
Drake also, by the way, he lost his D-line coach and had to do that with a new guy, Doug. I mean, the dude reloads. Okay, Zach, you kind of summarily stated Florida's going to hire an offensive guy, offensive-minded guy, and that makes all the sense in the world. There are several other offensive guys I could bring up, but there's really only one defensive guy I got even on my list, and it's Marcus Freeman. JB, you were to make a play for Marcus.
I thought you were going to Zach. I mean, look, we're continuing to hear Marcus's name around. Immediately, he was in the conversation at Penn State. You heard Cignetti, Rule, and Marcus Freeman really when that job opened. You've heard Marcus's name around the Florida job once it opened. I don't put any real credence into it. He just got a new deal from Notre Dame last December that pays him around $10 million on average, right around that, over the balance of that six-year deal. And the fact of the matter is right now, Notre Dame's a better job than Florida. Notre Dame is a better job than Penn State. If this was Ohio State coming open, then all the leprechauns could be trying to pool their pots of gold together, or an NFL job. But Florida, I don't see it. He's never coached in that region of the country, period. That doesn't mean that he couldn't. And Notre Dame has recruited the Carolinas and the state of Florida incredibly well, specifically under Marcus Freeman. But I just don't think that's the move that entices him. I don't see it at all. Does it mean that Pete Bavakwa has to hurry and get together another raise for Marcus Freeman? That's the name of the game. Does he get another rework deal this year that extends back out to 6 years and pushes him closer to $11 million per year? Probably if Notre Dame finishes out strong and makes a return trip to the playoffs, that's an expectation. But in speaking with people that I trust, I just don't think that's a move that Marcus Freeman that entices him to leave what he's done at Notre Dame, what's being done for him at Notre Dame. I think that, again, it's Ohio State because that's his alma mater, or it's the NFL.
Okay, I don't see it getting past Lane Drink. We're back in the offensive-minded world. How about from this universe? Brent Key, Jeff Brohm, Jed Fish?
Jed Fish, I'm told, quote, would crawl across the country on broken glass. That's his alma mater. So very confident in saying Jed Fish would do everything he could and honestly probably is already efforting to be a factor for that job. Jeff Brohm is my dark horse candidate at Florida, very much so, especially even after some phone calls and conversations I had late Monday night. I think that the notion that no way would Jeff Brohm leave home is not an accurate notion at all. So, yeah, I would not – there's no way I would exclude him from my pool of candidates. In fact, I would call him a much more feasible candidate there than I would Marcus Freeman.
I agree with John. I think it's weird because they're both alums, but in my view, Jeff Brohm's a lot more gettable at this stage than Brent Key. Brent Key left Alabama to go for a lateral position at Georgia Tech. Like, he didn't leave Alabama to become Georgia Tech's head coach. He left Alabama's offensive line job for Georgia Tech's offensive line job and said he had a better job there and more to sell at Georgia Tech than he did at Alabama, and then ascended to become the head coach and has done an outstanding job. They're the favorite to win the ACC. I don't think at this point in time he would leave for that job, as crazy as that might sound to the outside world. And then there's also the timing to consider here. Georgia Tech probably playing into, at minimum, December 20th at this point, and not going to leave Georgia, his alma mater, to take the Florida job when they're playing in the college football playoff. And if you're the University of Florida, you have other, you're not waiting till December 21st at the earliest to hire Brent Key when you have other options.
Yeah, outside of Lane Kiffin and Drink, I agree with all you guys in that I would have Jeff Brohm at number three on my list. And the thing that we haven't really talked about is hiring a guy that can develop quarterbacks. Jeff Brohm can do that. And to keep DJ Lagway around. I mean, Jeff Brohm's worked with some under-heralded dudes that are now playing in the NFL and, during his time at Purdue, and has done a really nice job at Louisville in his brief time back there with his alma mater. Does hiring a guy like Jeff Brohm keep a give you a chance to keep your star quarterback? I think absolutely. And does it give – more importantly, does it give him a chance to improve that quarterback? Maybe some new ideas, a new offensive approach kind of revitalizes DJ Lagway in a lot of ways. I think absolutely Jeff Brohm could do that.
Yeah, and Jeff Brohm, I think presently for the super handy USA Today coaching salary database is making just a shade under $6 million. Florida can double that without really blinking its eye. And so I think that's significant. Brent Key, I was told yesterday, I'm trying to research it here, is among the lowest paid coaches in the ACC. If I'm Georgia Tech, I find a way to fix that right now. I don't wait. Georgia Tech has a new AD, the Alpert guy. Yeah, Brent Key is only making about $4.5 million from Tech. There's also some intrastate politics to be played there. You have to remember that even though it seems like Georgia Tech's a private institution, it's not. It's a public institution. Well, guess who else is? The University of Georgia, very obviously. Guess how many people in that state favor one school over the other? And I'm talking decision makers. So Georgia Tech needs to get Brent Key extended ASAP. And if not, I think it will regret it.
Didn't they do an extension for Brent 6 months ago? Or am I kidding myself?
They probably did some stuff, but that was a different AD. It's a new AD now. Alpert's just been there a couple of months. He was Danny White's number two at Tennessee. And I don't think he's not interested in it, but still, let's not forget this too. Brent Key is at a place that willingly sold its two biggest home games, Notre Dame last year, Georgia this year, to the Mercedes Stadium strictly for the money. And they're like, oh, Brent, this is good for your program. And to Georgia Tech's credit, it's getting a total of $15 million for playing those two games down the street. But you forfeited any chance of true home field advantage against your two biggest opponents that you're bringing into Atlanta for two consecutive years. So I don't think you can lose sight of that. They would have had a chance to beat Notre Dame, I think, at home last year. Instead, that game goes to Mercedes Stadium, and there were just as many green and gold fans as there were blue jacket gold or yellow jacket gold fans. And this year, we absolutely know that Mercedes Stadium for that Georgia-Georgia Tech game will be bare minimum 60-40 red, if not 70-30 red.
On Doug's point on Jeff Brohm, it reminded me. So I've been going to the AHDA convention for over a decade, heard dozens and dozens and dozens of coaches speak, and probably in the top 10 of my favorite was hearing Jeff Brohm speak. He gave one of the big ballroom talks that they have, the big names in the profession do. And usually these are 30,000 foot, you know, here's how we do it at our program, or here's my coaching philosophy of what I've gotten, how I've gotten to this point in the profession. Jeff Brohm, we watched tape when Jeff Brohm talked in the big ballroom, and his talk was about how in everyone else one-on-one covered man coverage, that's covered. For me, if you see one-on-one coverage, you're playing quarterback. For me, that's open. I expect you to go make a perfect pass, receiver make a perfect catch, and we're going to throw that ball even if it's one-on-one coverage. And we watched clip after clip of practice of quarterbacks putting the ball exactly where it needed to be, receivers going up and making a contested catch. And Jeff Brohm said over and over again, make a perfect throw, make a perfect catch. That's open. And I was just, you know, and loving that talk and just blown away by his perspective. So that came to mind of if Florida ends up hiring Jeff Brohm, you're talking about maximizing DJ Lagway. Jeff and his brother Brian would come with him. You'd get the absolute most out of DJ Lagway if that ends up being higher.
Brent Key did get a new deal late at the end of 2024. It only pushed him through 2029, and it still is $4.5 million. So for a little context here, he makes one third of your nation's highest paid college football coach, who's an hour away in Athens. He makes $4.5 million, and Kirby's making almost $13.5 million. I'm terrible at math, and I can do that fraction.
Totally, you know, I'm just looking for a reaction here. Search is going a couple of days longer than it should. Not real sure what's going on. All of a sudden, your new Florida Gator head coach is Lincoln Riley. What's the response?
It's this.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't see that happening. we all agree, are kind of in a consensus that offense is the way to go, but you've got to be an offensive guy with proof in the pudding that you can also play defense in Gainesville. And, you know, Lincoln has made huge strides this year with DeAnton Lynn calling the defense and kind of getting things on track. But man, that would be a tough sell to get excited about.
Yeah, I'm not, as we've discussed, Scott, I'm not at all sold on the notion that it's Lincoln in LA in 26. But I don't think the fit is Florida. I would not. We've only talked offense, but his Tulane team just had a massive win against Army and got a bit of a lifeline because Memphis laid an egg against UAB over the weekend to lose in that rivalry for the first time in 14 years, which, by the way, used to be a really good basketball rivalry. But I wouldn't rule out John Summerall talking with the Florida people. And if they go defense, I think John Summerall has a lot of it factor to him and has won big without big resources.
I'm as high as anyone is on Summerall. I just, in my opinion, don't see Strickland being able to sell that to the fan base at Florida. Look, right or wrongly, I mean, you just hired a coach from a G5 school in the state of Louisiana. Different programs, different guys, all that stuff. I just – how many hires is this for Strickland at Florida? This is what, 3, 4, something like that? Like, I don't see him trying to sell another G5 coach from the state of Louisiana, even though all the difference and even though I'm as big a fan of Summerall as anyone.
Go ahead, Doug.
No, I just wanted to say real quick, under different circumstances, I think John Summerall is a great hire at Florida. Just under the present circumstances, as Zach just laid out, I just don't – I agree. I don't see it making a whole lot of sense.
I'm not disagreeing with either of you, but the reality of the college football world is how often does a college football coaching search follow the ready-made recipe card that you've got laid out? It's not very often whatsoever. And I just wanted to bring up one name we haven't discussed on this pod that I truly believe will be a factor at either Florida, Penn State, or UCLA, and that's PJ Fleck. I think he's done all he can do at Minnesota. They've embraced him. They've paid him well. But he just dog-walked Matt Rhule, who still is seen as the presumptive favorite at Penn State. He builds programs, whether you like him or not, and he can be a bit polarizing. But he has a – golly.
A bit.
You guys should try some diplomacy. He is a force majeure. And I could see him – he has the iron will it's going to take to fix one of these programs. I don't know which of those three it ultimately will be, but I would be pretty shocked if PJ Fleck is back at Minnesota in 26.
Yeah, I could see PJ being successful a lot of places. I just don't – again, I go back to Strickland trying to sell a hire to the Florida fan base. I don't see PJ as that guy. He trots out there and is just like – ta-da! I think he'd fear tomatoes being thrown at him, at Strickland himself, not PJ Fleck. I think PJ could win in a lot of places. I just don't see the dynamics of this search bending towards him.
Think of the answer.
Go ahead, John.
Say real quickly. Think of the ample waterways he would finally have to row the boat. He could row it out into the ocean. He's never gotten to do that.
Zach, before you throw another name out there, I think. There's a lot of things I really like about PJ Fleck and things that I've taken from him and done in my own high school program. But PJ is going to, for lack of a better phrase, he's going to force feed you the mantra, right? And I think because of that, and just because of the way he's wired, I think that he's a better fit at non-blue blood programs than he is at a blue blood program. If you go to Penn State and you talk about rowing the boat, Penn State dudes are going to tell you to, hey, shut up. We've already got a tradition here. We don't need your help. So it becomes a fit issue. Like, and that's why he's a great fit at a place like Minnesota, right? A place that's kind of a up and comer and that kind of thing. He can give them an identity. Places that already have an identity as a program, don't necessarily need a PJ Fleck to come in there and tell them who they are. So for those reasons, I think that's a really tough sell at Blue Bloods.
I completely agree.
But Penn State is a blue blood with a absolute blue collar persona that they lean into that. And so he would ditch the row. And I promise you, I bet you he would become the guy that ended every single on-field interview with "We are." I guarantee you he would turn it. He would embrace that.
He would embrace it. Yeah.
And he would make the same way that Pat Kraft signed the letter that we obtained that he sent to former players when they fired James Franklin, and he signed it "We are." I don't ever remember hearing James Franklin say "We are," and I guarantee you PJ Fleck would read the room well enough to sign off "We are." Hell, he might get it tattooed on his bald head, "We are."
Okay, that's a I want to throw this name out there, and could you do better? Yeah, you could do better. Could you do worse? 100% you could do worse, but I'm interested in y'all's opinion on James Franklin, Florida.
A year ago, if Florida had ripped the Band-Aid, I very adamantly believe James Franklin would be Florida's football coach right now, because I don't think at that time Florida would have had any success getting Lane Kiffin to leave Oxford, and Franklin had still won enough and was having a really good year at Penn State, what proved to be his best year, to take the Florida job. So I think if Florida had ripped the Band-Aid a year ago, I really believe James Franklin would be the head Gator in charge right now.
You're talking about University of Florida, where when they have been their best, they've had great quarterback play. And James Franklin just has never had great quarterback play. I mean, y'all know that's where I stand. He just hasn't. James, in this NIL world, I just don't see it personally.
I don't disagree. I think the argument for would be this in the 90s and 2000s where you or, frankly, anyone else is going to just win the SEC year after year after year. It's about being in that 10, 9, 10, 11 win range, getting in the tournament enough times that eventually it's going to fall your way. And maybe, I mean, we've established Franklin had a ceiling at Penn State, but the floor is high enough where you combine with the resources at Florida, you should be in the mix in the tournament year after year after year. And that right there gets you a level above where you've been since Urban Meyer. I'm not saying that I would do it. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think there's an argument to be made that he could be the fix of what Florida needs at this time if you can't get Lane.
A year ago, I agree with you. I don't think Florida can afford the perception hit right now.
And that's probably fair. Yeah.
We've discussed at length. You think they can't go get a guy like John Summerall and what he's done with less, but they would try to sell the hire of a fired coach. And also, let's not ignore the fact that in the land of just means more, they firmly believe they're a better league than the Big Ten, and James Franklin couldn't win the Big Ten. Like, come on. Like, no, I get the question. It's a valid one, Zach. And I'm sitting here telling you emphatically, I believe that James Franklin would have been Florida's coach 10 months ago, 11 months ago. But Florida didn't make that move because the Gators got hot, and now – they can't make that move.
And in making them, if you were to make that hire, you also lose DJ Lagway. Like, DJ Lagway wouldn't stick around for that. So, again, fair question for sure. I really believe James Franklin is a head coach in the Big Ten next year. It would be my guess. Or he's an analyst would be my two guesses. And that's partially me being a fan of a Big Ten program. So
you think Franklin a fit at Michigan State or Wisconsin? Or I would not.
I think he would come in and do a great job at Michigan State, bring a solid staff with him, be a place that's already made the Big Ten playoff, and go in there and revitalize that place with kind of a renewed focus and passion. I think absolutely. Wisconsin, I think I just see Michigan State pulling the trigger faster than Wisconsin. Wisconsin probably waits till the end of the year before making a decision. And I think Michigan State, with a new AD that didn't hire Jonathan Smith, and the fact that his alma mater's open right now, maybe they make the move a little bit quicker and get a head start.
Yeah.
On Franklin, if it's – I know this – if it's me, I'm Virginia Tech, I hire Franklin before the end of the month, and he has his operation going by – fully up and going by the end of next month.
Yeah, I've been asked about that consecutive days on the radio. There's some disagreement there. I think James Franklin is a good natural fit at Virginia Tech because of his DMV ties, because what he did at Maryland, or helped Maryland do, and was initially named, I believe, Maryland's head coach in waiting. Virginia Tech needs somebody that could come in and recruit the Tidewater region better than it has in recent years. Certainly that could go toe to toe with Mike Loxley forever, how much longer he's at Maryland and is the mayor or the godfather of the DMV, as I was told lately. James Franklin wouldn't be cowed by any of that. He would go absolutely compete with Loxley and I think get Virginia Tech on track sooner rather than later. Wisconsin, the way that Wisconsin is dragging its feet makes me wonder if there's already conversations going on with Jim Leonard, or if it's just McIntosh knowing that he fired Paul Chris so prematurely, he has to make sure that Luke Fickell is burned to a crisp before firing him.
It's interesting. You know, most of Brent Pry's staff, a lot of them, came from the James Franklin tree, even from Penn State. So there's a lot of that James Franklin influence there in Virginia Tech already. I don't know if that's plus or minus. If you felt like we were doing well and the program was in pretty good place, we just couldn't win enough games, and you want to change out Brent for James and a couple of key guys, yeah, good. Yeah.
All right. To answer my own – real quick, to answer my own question from earlier, so Strickland got to Florida November 1st, 2016. So he hired and fired Dan Mullen and Billy Napier. So this will be his third at bat.
And he also hired Todd Golden, who led them to a national championship in men's basketball last year. But boy, he had quite the controversial scandal along the way.
What about McElwain?
McElwain was there when he got there.
Yeah.
He fired him.
He fired McElwain.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
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 Well, McElwain fired McElwain, but that's a whole other ball of wax for another day. There was a shark incident, not really. And then there was a, then there were alleged threats. So,
yeah.
You never know what you're going to get. Football Scoop Podcast. We love doing this. Footballscoop.com, our favorite website. The Scoop's a great place to go hang out a couple times a day. You learn things. With that said, gentlemen, we're out.